Alrighty. Okay, it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker, a local, Allison.
My name is Allison.
Hello, Allison.
And boy, for the weather, there's a lot of people in here. Okay. I first want to welcome the new people who stood up. That was courageous of you to stand up and give your name. And all the birthday people, I've seen a lot of those birthday peoples of service on many levels in these rooms. So yes, now, happy birthday. I guess I'll just explain what happened. I was told about Al-Anon, and it was strongly suggested to me about coming to Al-Anon, and, you know, I just didn't think this was going to be the place that was going to have the answers for me, because I had gone, my first meeting I went to was in Rose City, and a lovely gentleman who I know, he's no longer here, Patrick. He was at that meeting and I knew of Patrick, and it was nice to see a familiar face in that room. And I actually went up to the literature table thinking if I could find a pamphlet on how to divorce my alcoholic husband. And it didn't exist in the rack or anywhere. There was all these other pamphlets except for the one I thought was going to be there, and it wasn't there. And that meeting at Rose City was huge, just like this. It was in a room, and it was a little overwhelming, and I did get a sponsor. I went to a few meetings. I didn't really call her up. I really didn't go to meetings too much. I thought I had this under my belt, this whole thing, because I heard you guys. I was like, yeah, no. I was looking at the differences, and she fired me. Wow, a sponsor actually fired me. And it wasn't like in a mean way. She just says, you know, obviously I don't have what it is that you need. And because I wasn't utilizing her. I mean, I wasn't, you know, working the steps or calling her up or going to meetings. And and then of course things got bad and I found myself back in these rooms. I started coming to the rooms and locally here in this area. Monday night, it's up at the Touchdown Church, and I was going there on a regular basis, and then I heard about this wonderful Wednesday night meeting not too far away, and I went to that meeting right there at the corner by See's Candies. That's a good meeting, Wednesday night, step study. And the first time I went into that meeting, the first meeting I went, they were doing rotation of service. And so they're wanting somebody to bring the cookies and the snacks. And for whatever reason, I raised my hand. And then that got me going, and I got to meet Agnes and Marianne and a lot of other people. And that's just how my journey started, coming to these rooms. And then from there, I met some other people that told me about the Barefoot meeting, and I started going to the Barefoot meeting on a regular basis. And you know, I just was going to a lot of meetings just thinking, you know, something was going to have to happen, because I was so depressed. I wasn't even getting up and going to work. I was neglecting myself to the utmost. And there was, you know, hiding the keys wasn't helping anymore. Checking the trash cans for bottles, it was just an insanity. It was just insanity trying to, you know, focus on this particular person and not focusing on me. And you guys kept saying, you know, take care of yourself, what are your hobbies? And I thought, gosh, I don't even know what my hobbies are. What are hobbies? I mean, I actually really literally had to look up the terminology of hobbies, because I thought my hobby was to take care of the people around me, you know, my daughter, my parents, him. And then when that was brought to my attention, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm not taking care of Allison. And that started getting this perspective of what it is that I needed to do, and I got myself a sponsor who hasn't fired me. And I actually did work out of the Blueprint for Progress, and that's pretty detailed, you know, with the questions and everything in there, and really working with these steps brought me to a whole new perspective on things. It's like I put on, it's like I took the contacts out and I put the glasses on. And I started seeing things from a different perspective. And you know, for whatever reason, I don't know what it was, but people were talking about this Foothill Roundup event that we were having in this area. And somebody who was on the committee, I believe she was chairing it at the time, she came up to me at the Wednesday night meeting. She asked, you know, do you want to be of service? We need some help. And, you know, me, I want to help. I mean, that's my game, right? I mean, I want to help. I was like, okay. And it brought me to a whole nother understanding of working with a group of Al-Anon people on a committee level. And it brought me to a whole nother perspective of meeting new people like Fred and Eric with a K, and working on that level of service work. And then I helped with the marathon that they had out in by Los Encinas as well. There's a marathon that they did, an all-day marathon. And it just, you know, being of service just brought me to a whole nother perspective of who I am. And I think somebody shared it in their cake giving that, you know, made me feel, it gave me self-esteem that I didn't know I had lost. Because, you know, when I came in here, I was so broken. I think I was like the biggest crybaby at the Monday night meeting. Agnes is witness to that, a few other women. And it just seemed like I just had a lot of all this built up feelings that I did not realize existed inside of me. I thought I had taken care of a lot of this stuff by doing some other things for myself. And I really had no idea that I was so broken. And this is 8 years later. You know, my daughter at the time was 11. She's 19 now. And she herself was going through the experience similar to myself with the ex-husband. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out together. And I just remember my dad, you know, things got really crazy, you know, violent and all that. And so my dad said, you know, I don't want my granddaughter growing up in that environment. You're moving home. And if you don't move home, because he was the stepdad, I'm going to call her father and we're going to make arrangements that she moves in with her dad, her biological dad. And that was like the light bulb that woke up for me, kind of like the reality of, yeah, you know, it's not just me that's trying to go through this process. My daughter's going through it too. And so with that, I moved in with my parents. And, you know, I just kind of just started coming to meetings, like literally every single night, wherever there was a meeting I was at. And thank God that I was coming to the meetings, and I was doing so many meetings at the time, because, you know, years later, when my daughter turned 15, 16 years old, she started coming home drunk, and she started doing things and behaving in manners that weren't acceptable to my eyes. And through you guys, I learned that there's a Saturday parent meeting I can come to. And so I started coming to here Saturday, and I took a commitment there too, because it kept me coming. I took the coffee commitment. And through that, I met some more people. And I have to say that, you know, I was isolating in the beginning. And there's times, even in 8 years, that I have to admit that I've isolated, but not to the extreme that I was isolating before coming to Al-Anon, because I was isolating so much that I wasn't even getting out of my bedroom. I mean, I was literally in bed for 4 days straight calling in sick. And, you know, if I called in sick the fifth time, they're gonna be like, what is going on with her? You know, this is not like Allison to be calling in sick. And I just, I was just so beside myself because I thought I had done everything I could to get, you know, I put him in all these programs, I got people to donate money so he could go to this really expensive program, and, you know, and I had to let it go. I had just to accept the fact that he's in his disease and just let it go and focus on Allison. And so I started, I joined the gym, started going, because that's what my sponsor does, he swims. So I joined the gym and I started going to the gym on a regular basis. I had taken some classes, I had gone back to school and taken some classes. I had, in the last 8 years, I went from one job position to another job position, and that, you guys taught me I can make those decisions to now, today to now. That I don't have to stay fixed where I'm at, that I can change and take that risk. And I'm so grateful that I took that risk, because the current job I've been at for 4.5 years is, you know, it's, who would have thunk? And I, you know, I'm not saying everything's all perky and all of a sudden, you know, you see the rainbows and you start coming to Al-Anon. It's a process. It really is a process. And I really had to open up my mouth at the small meetings and share and talk about what I was currently going through and listening to what you had to share. And I knew I wasn't alone. And that is what is so amazing, is that I realized I'm not alone in my situation. And if my experience, you know, if somebody doesn't have the same experience, I can go to someone else and say, what was your experience? And you get to share with me your experience. And, you know, still today, especially when it comes to my daughter, I will admit I enable, even to this day, except it's weird because now it's like I'm aware of it and the red flag goes up, ah, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, and it's like, okay, you just gotta give it to God. I just gotta take a deep breath, just let her have her personal experience that she's having, whatever mood swing she's in, and just say, you know what? I will talk to you when you're in a better mood, or just walk out of the room. Because before, I would be in there arguing, and we'd be doing this bantering back and forth to the point that we're screaming at each other, and we can't even hear what each other are saying because we're just so much into the scream. And what a difference that makes when I just sip it. That's a really hard thing to do, is to just sip it and just let that person have their experience. You know, I have to say that growing up, my mom had come to Al-Anon meetings when I was growing up, and I thought, oh, why is she going to Al-Anon meetings? All of us kids are fine, you know, I don't know why she's going, but she did. She came to, and now I understand why my mom came back, because my household environment, I understand now. I completely get it. And you know, I just know that for myself, that if it wasn't for Al-Anon, I would not be the person that I am today. I would not be able to stand here before you and speak my truth. And you know, I have learned to do this ritual that I do every night. I do a little bit of meditation. I get on my knees. There's a Courage to Change book that I love to read. I also have some books in the bathroom that I love to read at moments. I have them by my nightstand that I love to read. I have, like, you know, there's all kinds of tools that I did not realize were available to me, that I think I just blinded myself to them because I'm thinking, I can take care of this. I can handle it. I don't need help. Because that's how I was raised. I was raised that you just don't ask for help, you just take care of it yourself. And you know, today I can make mistakes, somewhat be okay with it, but understand it's going to be taken care of, and somehow just have the faith that God is somehow working through me to get this task done. And you know, because just recently, I made a huge mistake at the office. I voided 900 checks by accident. Oops! And maybe because I'm a likable person today because I wasn't a likable person 8 years ago, but because I think I, maybe because I like myself too a little bit, but because I'm a likable person, it wasn't like they pointed to the door and said, you're going, you know, that's it. You're out, here's the ruler, bam, you're gone. I've been showing up to work early, I've been staying late, you know, working with the IT department, working with the their department on the other end of the system we're working with to try to get this rectified. And finally, after 2 weeks, we have like come to some resolution and moving forward with the 900 voids I did. And I, you know, learning about purging and voiding, it was like, boy, why couldn't I purge at that time when 8 years ago, that would have been a lovely idea, purge. So it's everything's a process. And, you know, even today, you know, with my daughter, she's 19. There was a period, like I said, when she was about 15, she was coming home drunk. She came home drunk on July 4th. I was out with some friends just, you know, hanging out. My dad's like, you know, your daughter just came home. She's drunk. So I'm like, so I had to come home. And she's in my bed and she threw up and I'm cleaning everything. And she's just like, got leaves in her hair, doesn't remember how she got leaves in her hair. I'm like, how, you know, it's just this insanity. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm like, except she's my kid. I can't divorce my kid. I can't, like, you know, it's completely a different feeling when it's your kid versus your spouse. I mean, it really is different. And I took her to a meeting the next day. I mean, that's what you guys taught me. Go to a meeting. So I took her to this weird AA meeting out in Victory Park that I found that was at noon, and I made her get up and I made her take a shower the very next day. And except she didn't have a hangover, which I thought was very bizarre. And she went. And, you know, we had some more incidences, and because I shared with you about what I was going through with my daughter, someone came and introduced me to a program from adolescents that I could bring her to. And unfortunately, her biological father and I, you know, not together, and, you know, we've been somewhat of estranged. I mean, he's been somewhat a part of my daughter's life to a certain extent. They don't talk at all to this day, but at the time, to a certain extent, they were in each other's life. And anyway, we were going to this program, and they taught me how to communicate with my teenagers, basically what it boils down to, because once again, I'm cleaning up, you know, while she's leaving a mess, I'm up there sweeping it right behind her, you know, trying to, oh, maybe this will fit under the rug, you know, or, okay, this isn't going to fit on the rug, so maybe I'll have to do something else with it. And that's what I felt like I was doing with him, except now I was doing it with my kid. And so coming to the parent meeting and listening and participating in the parent meeting, I learned I needed to do the same thing I did, just give it to God. Or an understanding of my God, or an understanding of this power greater than myself. And I can't explain what it is, but it's an experience. And because of the experiences that I've had, I know he, and I have to think of my daughter, she's got her God. She's got a higher power watching over her. And trusting that her God is watching over her and reminding myself that has given me a lot of faith. In fact, about a month and a half ago, she text messages me and she's like, oh, I got a speeding ticket going on the 2 South. And I said, oh, okay. You know, I'm thinking, okay, the 2 South, 65 right. She probably got a ticket for 80 miles an hour. So she got a ticket for going 110. Yeah, my kid doesn't do anything on like a small basis, does she? I was like, and he didn't arrest you? He didn't take you into jail? I mean, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what grace is this officer had over my daughter? And I tried to explain to her, that's reckless driving. And she's like, well, no one ever told me, no, 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 that when no one's on the road, you can't go fast. Like, you took the test, right? mean, you did take the driving test and you passed, right? I was just like, okay. And she's learning a hard lesson because, see, I've speed myself, you know, maybe going about 80, but not like 100. I didn't know a car could go 110, by the way. And a Kia Sportage 2006. And I was like, okay, I don't think I've ever gone that fast. And it was on the 2 South by Holly Drive. It was 1, 2 in the morning. She was going to see her boyfriend. It was around Halloween. She had come back from Knott's Berry Farm, you know. So she was on a mission. And that mission came to a complete stop. And she was given grace. Because she could have killed somebody or she could have killed herself. That's the bottom line. And, you know, I have no idea about the process. I thought the process was you can postpone the ticket. I told her, I said, you're paying for this. She's like, I'm paying for this. Why am I paying for this? I'm like, because you're the one who was speeding. And, you know, you worked over the summer. You've got $5,000 saved. You're paying for this. And I think maybe a fifth or maybe a sixth of her savings is going to go to this ticket. So we got the letter in the mail, and it says she has to appear before the judge, because when you go 25 miles or faster on the road, you have to appear before the judge. She's 19 years old. She's going to have to go up and talk to the judge all on her own. I'm not going to be able to be there holding her hand. Now, I'll go with her. I'll sit in the back and kind of like observe. And I explained to her, I said, this is a big deal. And she could possibly get her license suspended for 30 days. And not only that, but it's going to be 2 points on the insurance. Mm. And I said, you know, the insurance may not want to cover you. So when you go and talk to the judge, just plead if you can take traffic school. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but at least I said you can ask. So, you know, I'm giving this one to God. You know, she's safe. She knows what she did now is not good. She knows this is going to be on her record for a while. She knows that, you know, she gets something else dinged, she could, like, get serious consequences. And I think, you know, this process of her going through this is what she needs. Now, I still don't understand why the officer didn't take her into jail, but maybe because the car was in my name, and he's like, does your mom know she's driving your car? So perhaps he has a daughter too. I don't know, but I just know that he gave her grace that night. But he did write on the ticket 110. And she did tell me, I said to her, I go, you didn't tell the officer what you just told me about, you know, not thinking you could speed because there's no cars. And she's like, yeah, I did tell the officer. I was like, great, he probably went back to the station and just like had a good laugh with that one. You know, and so that's like just one of a million experiences that I have learned that, you know what, this is something that is your responsibility. I will support you, I will be there. You're paying for the ticket, and if this goes on the insurance, you're gonna have to start paying for your own insurance. I mean, it's just gonna be, It's just how it is. And that you guys taught me is, you know, there's just some lessons others have to learn. And I can't keep covering and throwing it under the rug kind of attitude because she's not going to understand the consequences. And that's something you guys taught me too. And you know, there was a period where when she was 15 and she was coming home and she was doing what she was doing, I was coming to meetings, I was going to the Saturday meeting, and then there came a point where she just did not want to follow mommy's rules. So she decided she was going to go live with her biological dad because she thought the grass was greener. So she did. She moved to her dad's, went to a whole nother school district out in Granada Hills, and she left her, I was shocked, she left her friends, you know, I don't know if this was like, I'm going to show you, I'm going to prove you. But then 6 months later, she decided she wanted to come back home. And I said, yes, of course. But you got to follow my rules. you know, no drinking, no bringing that stuff home, you know, you're here, you go to school, you, and if you're not going to school, you work, you can do both. And so she understands what the rules are. I'm not going to have a loafer like watching TV all day long, you know. It's just, I had experienced that with him, and I wasn't going to do that with her. I was not going to do that with her. And, you know, going through that program that my daughter and I ended up going to, we learned a lot about each other, because they have you like sit in the middle and you're like knee to knee and you have to look at each other eye to eye and you have to talk. And that's something else I learned that we didn't do growing up in my family. We didn't talk. You know, my dad said blue, we said blue. My dad said right, we went right. It was like you just didn't question. You just did. And so we have come, you know, it's not perfect. There's, you know, there's times where things are still like, you know, working through a lot of things, even for myself, just day-to-day things, you know. However, I just keep the forefront of my mind when I start feeling myself slipping away to that old behavior, I guess, or that old way of thinking, like I'm just not good enough. And I start doubt, because when I start doubting myself, I start making a lot of mistakes. And it's like, okay, let's shake this up. Let's bring God into this space, because I can't do this alone. And then I learn to pick up the phone, or I learn to go to a meeting, or I've got this service committee that I, like tonight, I'd probably be home in my jammies just watching the movie. And because I was asked to be of service, I came here to be of service. And that's exactly what I'm doing. You know, when you ask me to be of service, I'm of service, because that is what the examples of the people before me have done. And as much work as the Foothill Roundup can be, it's a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun. And I just can't explain more about the fun that we actually have. I mean, we get to laugh. I didn't laugh when I came in here. I didn't know how to laugh. I didn't know how to, I'm sure I smiled, but I just didn't know how to laugh from my gut. It was like that fake laugh, ha ha, you know, but now I get to really laugh. I really get to embrace others and their experiences and what they're going through as well. And, you know, so Thanksgiving, we have this family ritual that we drive to Vegas, not that we have any relatives in Vegas, but we just do this. We go to Vegas, my parents drive to Vegas, and I'll drive to Vegas with my daughter. Sometimes my brothers will meet up with us in Vegas. And, you know, we just do Thanksgiving in Vegas. And then we come back on Friday, and, you know, hotel rooms are cheap that week, according to my father. So we go stay at New York, New York, or Venetian. This year we stayed at New York, New York. And so, you know, I'm doing my daughter's laundry beforehand because I see her laundry's not getting done. Okay. That's, you know, and then I'm working all day. I'm doing a lot of things, doing a lot of errands the day before we're going to leave. And I come home and she doesn't want to go. I said, you're coming, get in the car. I got your luggage in the car, we're going. Nope. It's not like she's a baby or an infant and I can just put her in the car seat and tie her up, you know? Because she's this full grown adult who's 19 years old and I can't like physically put her in the car and tie her up in the car, in a car seat. I'm just like, oh, wow, I remember those days. I was thinking when I couldn't get her in the car. And so I'm like really super upset, freaking out, not bringing God into this space. I call my father up, hysterical, and know what exactly my father says. Yeah, let her stay. We don't need that attitude here. What a novel idea. It was like God was speaking me through the phone. Huh? I was like, gosh, I didn't even think of that. You know, she's 19. I didn't stock the fridge with food because I thought we'd be gone. I didn't give her any money for food. I'm like, okay, well, you have no money and the fridge isn't stocked. Bye. And I went and I had the best time with my parents in Vegas. There was no attitude up in the room. And you know, and I completely get it now that I like try to swing back to when I was 19. I mean, who wants to be 19 in Vegas when you can't gamble, you can't really, I mean, come on, I get it. You know, she wants to be here. And it's a good thing that we had a friend who was staying at the house so that we did feel more comfortable because we knew she wasn't going to take care of the dogs or the bunnies. So, you know, it's, I remember when I was driving to Vegas, I was just like, I was kind of still in that mood, like, I can't believe she's not coming. We're going to go like ziplining, and we're going to go up to that Eiffel Tower. And you know what? I got to save a lot of money. No, I gambled, mind you, with my dad going from, you know, slot machine to slot machine. You know, he's like, oh, this slot machine's taking all my money. Let's go. And we go to another slot, or with my mom, and you know, it was just so neat to just be with my parents and just experience. And when I showed up that night, not that my dad has ever been to these rooms, but he's like, you know, your relationship with Jessica, I can see is exactly the same relationship with Matthew, my son, my brother. So he could see that I was kind of going down the same path he was going, and my brother's like a few years younger than me, in his early 40s, and he's still doing a lot for my brother. And I was just like, wow, for my dad to say that, that was big. When I got to the hotel, and he's like, you got to stop having these expectations. It was like God was talking to him. I'm like, you haven't ever been to an Al-Anon meeting, but you're talking like you've been to an Al-Anon meeting. I mean, it was like God was just speaking freely right through him. And I was like, and seeing, I was able to hear, I think, because I have this open mind now because of coming to these rooms and being of service and being with you guys, that it was like, wow, I'm actually hearing this. And it was kind of like when I got there, it was like this big weight got lifted, like, you know what? It's gonna be okay. My daughter's probably gonna be with her boyfriend on Thanksgiving, who knows? And I did send her a happy Thanksgiving text, and she did respond back. And you know, you guys told me all I gotta do for that kid is love her. That's what you guys told me, just love her. Now, when I had left that relationship, for the reason why I came into these rooms, my second marriage, yes, my daughter will tell you, I've been through two failed marriages, I don't know relationships. We got that all worked out in therapy. I hadn't talked to him in a while. It was like I didn't know where he was at. I knew he was somewhat alive because we have some mutual friends. Through that whole process of my daughter going through that program, I found out she's a cutter. And that threw me through God. And I really had to, not that I can understand it, but know that that's what she was doing. And so she had to end up in a psych ward for a week. And I just remember, you know, sometimes you gotta be careful what you pray for. Cause I prayed for like, okay, God, I know you're watching out for her. I know she's got a higher power and I've got my higher power, but please give me a sign. I'm just asking for a little sign. And so about 3 days of her being in the psych ward, I get a call from her stepdad, who she really looked up to as a father because we started dating when she was 3 and then we had to leave when she was like 11. And he called out of the blue. Like, I almost didn't want to answer or respond. I'm like, I've got so much going on in my world. Oh, I don't need this. And I was like, nope. Something inside of me said, take the call. So I took the call and he was reaching out because he wanted to make peace with my daughter. And I was floored. And it was like, I just kind of shared with him what she was going through and what she was experiencing. And he was in a whirlwind. And he's like, oh, wow. He's like, well, you know, I'll pray for her. I'm like, wow, he's going to pray for my daughter. He called her the C word in front of her. And it was just not a very good environment when we were together. And I was, because I had time here, I believe, and because I had opened my mind to the understanding that God's taking care of things, that I told her. I wasn't sure if I was going to share with her that he had called and wanted to make peace with her. And I told him, I said, you know, I got to talk to her first and see if she even wants to talk to you and meet with you. Because we had dogs and we had to leave the dogs behind. And I know that was a heartbreaking thing for my daughter, too, because we got the dogs together when we got married. And I just shared with her that he called and that he just wanted to reach out and just make peace with her. And I think in me sharing that with her, something happened, because when she came out of the psych ward about a month later, she said, I want to go see the dogs, but I don't want him to be there. I want him to stay inside. I don't want to talk to him. And I was like, well, okay, you know, observing her comfortableness, and I explained that to him. He's like, yeah, come over whenever. And we went, we saw the dogs, and he stayed inside, and everything just as he stated. And she's like, you know, maybe we could take one of the dogs or one of the Vishlas, you know, for a walk or something in the future. And I said, of course. And, you know, that experience helped my daughter, you know. And, you know, like I said, it was just such a God thing. I mean, I really thought I was going to see a burning bush. I wasn't expecting my ex to give me a call wanting to make peace with my kid. But if that's not a burning bush, I don't know what is. So that was, you know, and I get to see these miracles. Like, I didn't recognize them before. I get to see them today. I get to see these miracles, not only in my life, but in your life. And I was so blinded by it, because I was just so fixated on something else that I didn't see the gratitude, the acceptance, the forgiving, understanding more that, you know, when a person's in the disease, the person's in the disease, and I can be in the disease just as much as the person actually drinking. And I may not have a drink, but I'll act drunk. And, you know, just recognizing that and seeing that, and it's just made me so much more peaceful, and it's just made me feel like, I just, for the newcomers, I just want you just, you know, even if you just come to Al-Anon meetings and you're just sitting here and you're just listening, it's like you're doing this, that this is what you're doing. You get to come here for an hour and a half and not think about whatever it is that you got to think about. And that's what my experience was. I got to get away for that hour and a half where I don't have to be in the stinking thinking when I'm at home. Because I can so easily be in the stinking thinking and just start doubting myself, just wonder, am I really doing the right thing? It's like, yeah, I'm exactly right where I'm supposed to be. I'm exactly right where I'm supposed to be. And sometimes I really don't think I am, but I really am. And it's, you know, doing all kinds of service work, and I just can't express to you just the, like when I was doing the hospitality, I had asked a friend to help me, and I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I said, yeah, I'll be hospitality for Foothill Roundup. What a job that is. And I remember I'm like trying to set the tables up, and then he comes, someone else comes in, and they're rearranging my tables. I'm like, oh, how dare they? They're rearranging my tables. And I had it all set up perfect. But then, you know, I was like, let it go. Let's just see how this happens. You know what? They set it up perfectly, because the way I had it set up, people weren't going to be lining up, like, you know, coming around getting the food. It was going to be chaos. So, you know, the minute I just let go and just let someone else kind of like step in and help me, it's so much more, I can't express it. It's just, it makes life easier. It was like before I came to Al-Anon, it was like I was making things so complicated, it seemed like. And I felt like I was like spinning, taking care of her, taking care of this, taking care of you, taking care of, I don't know, I would just like make up things to take care of, it seemed like in my head. Because I don't want to focus on my feelings. I didn't want to focus on what was going on inside of Allison in my gut. I don't want to take care of Allison. And then the minute I start focusing on myself and I start taking care of myself, it's like it just magically happens. I can't explain it. Now, I'll share with you about my hair. So I had this really long, beautiful blonde hair. And there's this product called Blonde. And my daughter was using it in her hair. Now, mind you, she's half Japanese, so she has different kind of hair than I do. So she's using it, and I see she's using it, and it's making her hair lighter and blonder. And 5 more minutes. And I'm like, oh, I'll try that product. So not only did I do the spray, but I did the conditioner, I did the shampoo, and I bought a bunch of the blonde stuff, and I'm like, spray. Well, do you know what's in that stuff? Peroxide. So I'm like, I'm losing my hair. Okay, God, what's going on here? I'm losing my hair. And so I went, and my hairstylist was like on leave because she had a hysterectomy. So I was seeing this other hairstylist. She couldn't figure out. So I went back to my, she's like, you look, she says, your hair is like bunny hair. I'm like, oh man, it's because of those damn buddies I got, right? That I'm hanging out with the buddies too much at the house or something. I'm like, I got their bunny hair. So I'm like, ah. So lo and behold, we had to cut it short. And I haven't had hair this short since I was 5 years old. There's a picture of me. 5 years old with a missing tooth. My dad took a picture of me because he thought I was so cute in the backyard with this missing tooth and short hair. That's the last time I had hair this short. And I get compliments on my hair, and I'm like, in the morning I'm trying to get it to the way I want it, and I want it like to style or do something, and it won't do any tricks like it used to. I'm like, my hair won't do any tricks. And you know what? I've come to accept it. Because there's nothing else I can do, right? And it's just hair. So I call my hairstylist, my hair doctor. And so she put some extensions in, and she went and we cut my hair a little bit, or a lot, I should say. And now it's okay, I guess. I mean, I'm getting all kinds of compliments about my hair, and I was like, yeah, but you don't understand. I ruined my hair. And actually, I didn't, you know. It's just, this is just how it's supposed to happen, you know. And of course, I got rid of all the blonde products, or gave them all to my kids so she can have them. So, you know, just natural hair is the best way to go, I think. Like I said, at work, I have this group of women that I work with, and they're amazing, and we work as a team. And, you know, with everything that I was trying to do and accomplish in the last 2 weeks, if it wasn't for these two women, you know, jumping in and helping out and just sitting with me and trying to figure out the process, I don't know. It's because I opened up my mouth and I'm like, I need help. And today I get to do that. Today I get to say, I need help. I can't do this by myself. I need someone who's had experience with this, or I need, you know, because before I thought I had to do it all on my own. And you guys are here to let me know I don't, that I can live a joyous, serene, peaceful life, because I'm merely just, I need to love Allison. I need to get to know who Allison is, and I'm still learning who I am. And if I ever stop learning who I am, I don't know what will happen, but I just know there's more to me than, I mean, if I can go through life with this kind of hair, I know I'm okay. I know I'm gonna be good. And it's, you know, I get to have, I'm a Lyft driver now, part-time. And I get to pick people up and have some conversations with them. Like I learned Insight Mars from somebody I picked up. I mean, I didn't even know that was happening a few Mondays ago until I picked this gal up from JPL. We're all having this full conversation. And, you know, I like people. I didn't like you guys before because I didn't even like me. I just wanted to stay in my room, stay in my jammies, stay in my bed, and not come out. And hope that somehow everything was, I don't know what I was thinking, but I was depressed. I was seriously depressed. And somehow coming to these rooms and meeting you guys and being of service and working with a sponsor, I can still get sad, but I don't get so sad that I gotta isolate. I don't get so sad that I gotta feel like I gotta, now maybe on a rainy day I would like to stay in my room and curl up in a warm blanket. However, I got responsibilities. I gotta try to fix all the 900 voids I did, so I gotta show up at work. So I just have to share with the new people who are here, just what are your hobbies? What do you like to do? I'm still learning about Allison. Thank you.